Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
You know, I was really thinking about this the other day. When I was growing up, like, people had a career. They got into a business or a workplace, and they were expected to stay there until they retired. I mean, my father worked for the United States Post Office until he was eligible to retire. And then he worked for, you know, Chase Manhattan Bank until he was eligible to retire again. Most people, when I was growing up, had these lifelong careers. And, you know, then I chose to get into multiple careers where you have absolutely no job security. And I think now that's pretty much most businesses. I mean, I've just looked, you know, this morning I wake up, and for the last couple of days, it's all been like, Chris Licht, he's not making it at CNN, and nobody likes him at CNN, and all the anchors at CNN hate him. I wake up this morning, and he's gone, right? He departed the company yesterday, or today, I don't know. I met with Chris, and he will be leaving CNN. David Zaslav, the chief executive of parent company Warner Brothers Discovery, told CNN employees at the start of their daily editorial meeting. So here you have a network. He's brought in. He fires two of their anchors. He's got everybody with really low morale. Their ratings are lower than they've ever been before. They're not making any money. And now it's all his fault, in spite of the fact that all of this was going on before he got there. You had Jeff Zucker, who was summarily disposed of. They claimed it was over some nonsense, but it was really not over nonsense at all. They wanted him out. So it's been less than a year, I think, right? I guess it was a year. And this is a guy who was really the you know, what did he do? What did Chris Licht do to deserve to be at the helm of CNN? Not that CNN is such a prestigious organization anymore, right? We're not talking about Ted Turner's CNN. He was like the producer of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Okay, you know, big deal. But of course, this newspaper article that came out, not newspaper, a magazine, The Atlantic, published an article last week in which they literally had their author speak to 100 CNN employees, and unanimous opinion was that he couldn't lead the organization. He apologized, he vowed to fight like hell, he's going to win over the trust, but it was clear that he was not going to make it. And so they got rid of him. So now it's David Levy, who was CNN's chief operating officer last week. And on, you know, we'll see what happens. CNN is a pathetic wannabe has-been news network, but they all are. You know, I none of them seem to be surviving very well. You know, they all had their heydays. CNN certainly had its heyday. It was the first one. And then they all had, you know, to deal with the opinion side of news, which became prevalent. And they, you know, that you saw Fox take the lead. This morning I wake up on top of the fact that Chris Licht is out at CNN. Rachel Maddow got MSNBC into the primetime winning. I mean, she literally won over Sean Hannity. So what does this all really tell you? Because I think that's what's relevant. The the departure of various people, including Tucker Carlson, and I'm going to get to Tucker Carlson, who started his Twitter show. There is no appetite anymore for what they've been doing. That's the bottom line. There is literally no appetite for the kind of cable news that we have all been living with for the last, I'm going to say, 6 to 8 years. All right? For a while, there was kind of everybody was having a very good time around Donald Trump. You either hated him or you loved him, and so that was exciting. But that couldn't last forever, right? You know, because the hatred became so deep and so profound, the whole Trump derangement syndrome, that people were turned off. Even people who didn't like him were turned off. But certainly people who did like him really just couldn't tolerate. I couldn't even watch MSNBC, even for a few minutes, because it was just Trump bashing, Trump bashing, Trump bashing. And I'm trying to figure out what's happening in China, like what's happening with Russia, you know? And they could never get to that. And it was so mean and so insidious, right? So now I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, why would Rachel Maddow suddenly be the one person that's, you know, beating back all the other news networks on MSNBC, which was always the lowest rated one, right? Well, it's pretty simple to me. It's because Rachel Maddow has stayed consistent to her audience. Whatever that audience is, I don't have to be part of that audience to understand that she has, and this is a woman who literally attempted to ruin my life. She ended up saving it, but she attempted to ruin it when she played that, you know, loop of me talking about the Second Amendment. But she's been consistent. She never changes. She believes what she believes. She says crazy things all the time, and people shake their heads and love it, you know. And so if you're looking for something that's consistent, then she's really about all you got. I think the only show that beat it was The Five at Five, which is, it's not for me. That show is not for me. I really, it's not that I don't like people with differing opinions. I certainly do. But four against one is not exactly my cup of tea. I mean, if you got four conservatives and one liberal, or four liberals and one conservative, that's just not a fair fight, right? I used to love Crossfire, where you'd have a liberal, you know, Buckley, a conservative against a liberal. But, you know, that's not what The Five is. The Five is like, you know, it's like The View to me. It's a lot of chatter and a lot of predictable comments by a lot of predictable people. You know, when the best you can do is have Geraldo Rivera and Juan Williams as your liberal persons, or Jessica Tarlov. The only one I can even mildly tolerate is the former Congressman Ford. You know, he's at least, you know, thoughtful in his comments. But for the most part, it's, you know, Greg and Jesse beating up and telling jokes. It's the judge ranting and raving. And it's Dana Perino trying to pretend that this is all normal, right? So cable news is pretty much, it's on its way out. It really is. And for a long time, it had replaced radio, talk radio. It demolished liberal talk radio a long time ago, and then it was really impacting conservative talk radio as well, because half of the people that were now on conservative talk radio had to have shows on the Fox network in order to have any credibility, which is really very demeaning to those of us who radio is our career. But it was like Sean Hannity did 3 hours on the radio and an hour on television. Laura Ingraham started on the radio, and then as soon as she could get a TV show, she was off the radio. Brian Kilmeade, I think Brian Kilmeade is on the radio like 10 hours a day and on TV 10 hours a day. I don't know if the man ever sleeps, you know, taking advantage of his popularity. I get it, you know. Certainly Tucker Carlson, I don't ever remember him having a radio show, but he certainly has been on every network, CNN, MSNBC, and of course, Fox. And when they fired Tucker, all bets were off. That's my opinion, you know, and I'm sticking to it. When they let him go, what it said to the audience was, we have no idea how to run news networks anymore. And at first we decided we were going to move towards more opinion than straight news. Then we decided, no, we're going to move back to straight news. We just don't know what to do. So we're going to keep making terrible mistakes and hope that you'll watch enough of it so that we can make a few bucks on it. But here's the good part about all this. And I do, you know, I must admit that I'm pretty happy about this. Talk radio is going to be preeminent once again when it comes to, in particular, conservative viewpoints. I think it's also going to incorporate more liberal viewpoints. Imagine, you know, me saying that, because I always said that the reason liberals aren't successful on radio is because, you know, they're constantly talking against business. And if you're against business, who wants to advertise on your show? You know, businesses want pro-business people. But I think even that's changing. And if I were younger and I had the opportunity, I would find a really smart liberal. I used to know a couple of them. Andre Eglesheim was one of them. And I would co-host a show where we would do like a crossfire. But it would have to be somebody I had respect for. I was able to do that in years gone by. It's just, you know, it fell out of favor. And people, you know, got so polarized that, you know, if you liked one host, you hated the other. And if you hated the other, you didn't want to listen to the show. And it just got crazy. But I think that if I were starting out, that's what I would do. I'd find a really credible liberal, maybe an RFK Jr., you know, because he's not going to get the nomination, right? But he has made some powerful statements that show me he's literally thoughtful. And it would be fun to debate him. You know, I could see myself debating, well, there's not a whole lot of people that I have that much respect. This guy Ford, I'm trying to remember what his first name is, the congressman. I could see doing a crossfire type show with him. You know, I could even see, and I know this will make you like, you know, probably roll your eyes. I could see doing like a crossfire show with Chris Cuomo. Only because he would never really get the better of me. And he can be thoughtful. And if that were the tenor of the show, if it was meant to be thoughtful, it could work. Maybe not Chris Cuomo, but certainly there's got to be some liberals out there that I could have a conversation with. And that would be interesting programming. Because what we've got going on now, holy moly, nobody's able to make it. Not that that's the whole content of my show today, but I did have to mention that, you know, licks out at CNN. Magazines are just not working out. You got Chuck Todd is out at Meet the Press. You know, you got an article in a magazine that destroys a big cable TV CEO. What's going on? You know, and are you paying attention? Because I really, and this is anecdotal, I understand it. I'm not the beginning and the end of, you know, the answer to this question. But since, let's see, I want to say since the last election, I have limited my viewing of cable news programming tremendously. First and foremost, these are very troubled times, and the kind of troubles we're having are demoralizing and depressing for somebody who's got any patriotism in them. So I don't watch a lot, okay? I also am extremely tired of the rancor. You know, it's one thing to have a legitimate debate and an argument. It's another thing to have descended, and conservatives have now descended, just like liberals, into the name-calling. Like, I don't get, that's not fun for me. If I want to watch name-calling, you know, I can go to a playground and look at little kids, because that's who does that. And so, when they took Tucker Carlson off a couple of months ago, that put me in the position of having to make a decision. Like, was I going to watch anything anymore? And as you well know, I withdrew completely. I do not watch any cable news for more than 5 minutes. Like if something is breaking, I may turn it on to see what the breaking story is. I kind of like Harris Faulkner. I saw she was sitting in this week at the in the Tucker time slot, so I watched. But I could only watch for 5 minutes because immediately it was bashing, 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 even Harris. So it's like, you know, I can live without this. I can read. And that way I can stop reading when the bashing begins. You can't really stop television when the bashing begins because it's constant. So where are we going and where am I heading with all this? If ever I felt there was a need for my show, and maybe even a longer show, now don't get your hopes too high, but if ever I felt that talk radio was going to have to fill a void, it's right now. I have never been so convinced that the only place where people are still having conversations that in the end make sense, whether they agree with them or not, is going to be on talk radio. So much for my plans for retirement again. Anyway, don't forget to download our app, the 850 app. That way you never have to worry whether they take AM out or they leave AM in cars. By the way, the Congress just passed a bill, they, you know, insisting that they not take AM radios out of cars. Good for Congress, about time they did something relevant. But if you have the app, you don't have to worry about that, right? And you can visit the website, 850wftl.com. Either way, you can get involved in all of our contests, get breaking news, and just be on top of things. You know, my No Restraint podcasts are definitely worth a listen. And I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back. Okay, so we had Chris Christie declare war against Donald Trump. Now, let me remind everybody, Chris Christie ran against Donald Trump in a primary before, and it basically ended up, helping Donald Trump because he went after Marco Rubio. So I don't know what Chris Christie's, thought process is, but let me just say this uncategorically. Chris Christie will never be able to be on that debate stage because he will never get enough donors. He's the most unlikable, you know, donut eating character ever. So I don't know what he's trying to do, get some press. I really don't know, but I don't care. The one that's curious to me is Mike Pence. Today, Mike Pence kicked off his campaign. And you have to think about this for a minute, right? Because this is politics at its most interesting. Mike Pence was the VP with Donald Trump. And for 4 years, Mike Pence stood by Donald Trump at times when everybody else was running and abandoning. He defended him. He agreed. He believed the whole nine yards until that day, that fateful day when the protesters appeared in the Capitol building. And for some reason, Mike Pence decided instead of extending the confirmation of all of the vote totals, which he had a perfect right to do, he was going to get nervous and get scared and blame President Trump for the fact that he and his family felt threatened, right? So now he's running against the man whom he stood alongside of for 4 years, and they did incredible things. Because you can hate Donald Trump with all your heart and soul. You can feel that Donald Trump is a madman, a misogynist, an anti-Semite, whatever your, you know, Trump derangement syndrome is all about. You can feel that way, but you cannot deny that the 4 years that Donald Trump and Mike Pence were sitting in the, you know, in the executive branch, that this country was able to do some things that people like me and definitely people like you, conservatives, were very pleased with, much more so than all of these rhinos that have been, you know, in power for so long and couldn't get diddly squat done. Okay. So for Mike Pence to now run against him is going to be really tricky, because the last thing that he can bring up is all the great things that Trump did when he was vice president. So he's walking that fine line. You have to remember that Mike Pence was a radio personality before he was a politician, before he became a governor and then the VP. And so he's good. He's really good with parsing and finessing conversations. So he got up in this video announcement this morning and he said, "Today our party and our country needs a leader that will appeal, as Lincoln said, to the better angels of our nature." So he then talked about all of the great things that he did when he was vice president without mentioning Donald Trump. He talked about how his family and he have been blessed with a lot of opportunities to serve the nation, and it would be very easy for him to stay on the sidelines, but that's not how I was raised. That's why today, before God and my family, I'm announcing I am running for president of the United States. Now, one thing I can tell you is that the evangelical vote is hanging in the balance. Evangelicals would much prefer Michael Pence, to see Mike Pence get the nomination. I don't think they're that interested in Governor DeSantis. I don't think they know enough about him to be, you know, pro DeSantis. And maybe they've found out more things about Donald Trump than they're going to be able to forgive this time around. I don't know. But what I do know is what the Republicans are setting up yet again is an all or nothing primary. It's either put Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, or just, you might as well just abandon the race altogether. Mike Pence cannot win. Ron DeSantis cannot win. And I've told you a million times why I believe Ron DeSantis cannot win. And I saw a great example of it just the other day when he was up on a stage with his wife, Casey DeSantis, and he looked completely overpowered by her. And she ain't overpowering like a Donald Trump would be. But so that notwithstanding, I think he's a great governor. I think one day he'll be a great president, just not today. So no matter who they put it, the Chris Christie has no chance. Nikki Haley, you know, she kind of hangs in there. I don't know how, but somehow she's able to get donors. Tim Scott, who I gave very little credit to, I didn't think he had a prayer, has really been asserting himself in a way that I think is commendable, and will probably put him firmly in third place for some period of time, unless Mike Pence is able to get some traction. So all of them are in single digits behind the governor and, of course, behind Donald Trump. You know, today all the articles are coming out because now people are getting scared. You see, Donald Trump had such a commanding lead, and so now the rhinos are scared, and, of course, the Democrats, they don't know whether to be happy or to be sad because they believe they could beat Trump. They just don't know if they could do it with Biden, you know. And so I'm watching all these articles come out today. Governor DeSantis is gaining. He's got he's winning here and he's winning there and he's going to win here. And I'm thinking to myself, do they not realize that by diluting all of these normal Republican voters, whether it's evangelicals, whether it's other people of faith, whether it's business persons, you know, the more they dilute the message and the more candidates they have, the less possibility they have of coming out strong with a candidate at the end of this. Now, that worked for Donald Trump in 2016. It will not work in 2024. And for me to say that is really a lot, but it's just not that method is over. You can't do it that way. So what the Republican Party has to do, and they better do it quick, is figure out how they're either going to make peace with one Donald J. Trump, or they better start praying that the legal system takes him out of the race, and that they're able to emerge with some kind of a strong package. You know, that strong package could be anything. Look, I'm not in the business of pretending that that couldn't happen. Donald Trump may end up losing this nomination, but how do you win an election with the characters that are there right now? I don't know. Unless you form a very solid kind of block, which could be a Mike Pence with a Tim Scott. It could be Mike Pence with DeSantis. It could be a DeSantis with Tim Scott. I don't know what that combination is. It could include Nikki Haley. I don't know. And is there a dark horse candidate that's going to emerge? I don't know the answer. But I will tell you this. it really makes me sad that the people who knew that Donald Trump did the things that he said he was going to do within his power. Couldn't build a wall. I get it. I hear you, Ann Coulter. But he did as much as he possibly could, and even more than we ever dreamed he could. And for us to now say, that's just not good enough, we don't like his personality, really, really shows the country that we don't have any principles at all. We have no loyalty, and we didn't even appreciate what he did. So I think it's a losing proposition for the Republican Party. I am talking to people all over the country who are telling me that they predict some really awful losses for Republicans in 2024. And while I had hoped against hope that that wouldn't be the case, I see the dark clouds forming. And the grassroots better take back the party, because if it goes back into the hands of the Republican establishment, you may never see a Republican president again. That's my prediction, okay? All right, let me take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about what Tucker Carlson is doing, what he's up to, and how that is going to affect the upcoming election, because everything is going to affect it. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
So much to talk about and so little time. You can't imagine what's going on around the rest of the country, because most of the time we stay pretty focused, and at least I try to stay pretty focused here at Florida politics. And it's amazing to me how my listeners, by and large, really think out of the box. You know, and they'll send me text messages and emails and make comments on whatever social media platforms that they use, which show me that they're more thoughtful than the people who are actually controlling politics, right? You know, I already got an email from one of my, favorite listeners who said his gut tells him that Mike Pence's goal is to be the VP to somebody, which is kind of what I just said. And if by some small chance he gets the nod, he gets to be the candidate, that's a bonus. And of course, Tim Scott's greatest, I used to think that Tim Scott's only positive was that he was a person of color or whatever I'm supposed to call people like him. But now I'm beginning to see that he actually has a very Horatio Alger story, and he tells it extremely well, much like I think Clarence Thomas tells his story, if anybody will listen to it. You know, unfortunately, Democrats don't listen to that. So I think that somehow Tim Scott is in probably one of the best positions for a VP nod, regardless of who gets the nomination. And you notice that the presumptive leader right now, Donald Trump, has beat up everybody except Tim Scott. And he hasn't taken many shots at Nikki Haley either, but, I think he doesn't take Nikki Haley's candidacy very seriously. But he does take Tim Scott's candidacy very seriously, and I think Tim Scott has been an ally of the president, was an ally, and that's irrelevant. Donald Trump is very much about who is been there consistently for him, and I think that's a fascinating dynamic. This is going to be a fascinating primary, no matter what. Even the Democrat primary, when you think about it, is kind of unusual, because you have a Kennedy, and anytime you have a Kennedy in the mix, like a lot of memories come out. This is Robert Kennedy's son, okay? And I think he's making the Democrats extremely nervous. Because first and foremost, he's a Kennedy. And there's a tremendous sense of loyalty to the Kennedy family. I mean, how much more do you have to sacrifice for the country than to have two of your elected representatives gunned down, one as president and the other running for the presidency? And so you take this man, and the great thing about RFK Jr., and as I've revealed before, you know, full disclosure, I knew him when he and I were both young. And he's very bright and very dynamic. And the fact that he has this laryngeal aphasia makes him kind of more human. In other words, he's not one of these typical, like, bigger-than-life Kennedys. And he's been on the forefront of a lot of relevant issues to younger voters, whether it's do vaccines cause childhood illnesses or the rest of it. So he's not young, but he's not old. You know, he's kind of like in that perfect pocket where you think he's got experience. He certainly comes from a background of politics. He is articulate. He's thoughtful. He's published. All of these things that, you know, really are qualifiers for this. And he doesn't fall down on the stage at the Air Force Academy graduation. You see, no matter what, they no longer can deny, even though Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday did some convoluted description of why, you know, President Biden falling on the stage didn't mean anything. People see that, and it does mean something. Most of us, particularly those who are in the voting category, have parents or grandparents who are failing in health for whatever reason. Some of them have, you know, physical infirmities. Some of them have some dementia or some Alzheimer's. So we know what it looks like. And when we see the president of the United States, you know, practically faceplant over and over again, we have cause for concern. Even Hillary Clinton said, hey, look, it's a valid point that, you know, we're not sure if he's physically up to the task or if he's even mentally up for the task. We're talking about a man who would literally be 86 years old by the time he got to the end of a second term. And can he serve this term, never mind another 4 years? So Robert F. Kennedy is an interesting dynamic. I said that all along. And I'm grateful, because otherwise that would be so boring, just trying to figure out how Joe Biden is going to get through the campaign, never mind the rest of this term and another term. But it brought to mind something else, you know, and for a person of faith like me, you know, I believe that God is in control of everything, right? And a couple of months ago, I started printing out all of these, pieces that over the years I had written, monologues and other things about Jimmy Carter, the president. Because, you know, you can't spend 30 years on the air saying that Jimmy Carter was the worst president ever until Joe Biden, but and not have some notes to back it up. And I keep I am a journaler. I journaled about my program for 30 plus years, so I have a lot of that information. And I started putting it all together, and also the facts about Jimmy Carter, because he went into hospice, right? So, you know, I often tell the story when we used to do something called the Deadpool, which is a terrible thing. I don't do that anymore. But we used to all pick a person and say that we predicted they would be the first person to transition out. And I had picked Jimmy Carter back in the 90s, you know, and he never, you know, never, he got sick and he'd get well, he'd get cancer and he'd get healed. And now he's like in his late 90s and he's in hospice, and he's been in hospice for months, you know. And so I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, like, so then can I really make a case that Joe Biden is beyond, you know, the ability of God to keep him for the next 6 years? I can't. I would have never believed that. You should see this pile of papers that I have here. waiting for the day when the announcement comes that Jimmy Carter has finally passed, right? Because there's no way I can go on the air and not talk about it, right? And I don't have to lie about it. People know how I felt about him. But he also was a great humanist. He also was a devout Christian. There's a lot of things that I'll want to say when that day comes. So I've got all these notes, and you know, they're starting to collect dust, you know, and that's amazing. So what it reminded me of was that here I am, and here so many of us are saying, you know, the Biden's bell is tolling. We have no idea. We really don't. And frailty is not necessarily the end of the road for anybody. You know, he may not be very steady on his bicycle anymore, but that doesn't mean that he can't lead if he's got the proper people around him. Now, of course, my biggest problem with Joe Biden is he's got all the wrong people around him, all the people who have thrown this country into despair, from his economic team to his foreign policy team. Look at the world today. I mean, I don't have to, you know, even work hard at making the case for what a poor president he's been. But I think RFK is going to make this an interesting primary. Really. You know, and I would have never expected it. And then, of course, you all know that my perfect package would be Donald Trump and RFK on the same ticket. It would dispel every notion that there are no people that could work together and maybe do great things for this nation. Okay, I know it's never going to happen, but, you know, dreams, you should never not dream, because if you don't have a dream, then nothing can ever come true. Anyway, don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, Dan Bongino, at 4 o'clock, Ben Shapiro, and then at 5 o'clock, Matt Walsh, and the WPTV News will follow that. And then, of course, tomorrow morning, we begin all over again with Jen and Bill in the morning and the South Florida Morning Show. But I have one segment left. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. So what can I tell you? The other thing that I always hesitate to talk about these things, because I tell everybody they're not important. We shouldn't be paying attention to them. But there's something fascinating about the Harry Meghan couple. And I didn't know what was going on, but apparently there's a big lawsuit, a civil lawsuit going on in Great Britain. And Prince Harry went to court, and he's, you know, apparently, you know, fighting for his dignity. I don't know what the purpose is, but he claims that, you know, the press has been brutal to him, and that it's not fair, and that he knows that his phone was being hacked by newspapers and whatever. And so he's sitting on the in the witness box, and it's funny, because I saw some, they don't have actual photographs of what goes on in the courtroom, but they do drawings like we do. And all of these attorneys in the high court wear those white powdered wigs like in the old days. And I didn't realize that, but it certainly makes them look a lot more, I don't know, just, it's kind of like a British accent, right? Like when you hear somebody talk with a British accent, you immediately assume that they're like smart, which is not true, but not necessarily true anyway. But when you see these like white wigs that these men are wearing, you think to yourself, well, this is serious business, right? So now this guy, no matter what, Prince Harry is a prince, right? He's not used to anybody badgering him. He's got pretty, you know, pretty much carte blanche, as we've learned. He's 38 years old, and he is claiming that these 140 articles that were published between 1996 and 2010 had information that they got using unlawful methods. And in most instances, he's claiming that his phone was hacked. So now the barrister, you know, the attorney that is doing the cross-examination is brutal. you know. And what he said was, do you understand that, like, there's an interest by the public in any story having to do with royals? Which, of course, makes perfect sense, right? Like, if you have a king and a queen, you want to know what's going on with them. And if you have princes and princesses, you want to know what's going on for them. And if you're Harry and you have spent the last 5 or 6 years making your life like the biggest psychodrama ever, you know, marrying an actress and leaving the royal family and having children and accusing the royal family of racism and all this stuff that's been going on, do you really think that the public isn't going to be curious, and that they're not going to want to hear stories, and that the press isn't going to meet that need? You know, what do you think is appropriate? How much of your life should be on display, he was asked. And he like had the nerve to say none of it. You know, he said this was an industrial scale destruction, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I'm sorry, with all the prestige that you have and all of the blessings that you have, it comes with a price. You know, people like me can't sue for libel. I'm a public figure. When people say nasty things about me, I just basically have to take it. You know, even when it impinges on my ability to earn a living, although that was supposed to be the qualifier, if you impinge on my ability to earn a living, I'm supposed to be able to come after you. But even that is so hard. The bar is so hard to overcome. So I'm just, I got to tell you, I've been fascinated by this. I got to believe that this guy is just, he's got to be fed up with what he's done and how he has literally sacrificed everything that could have been his life for, I guess, love. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's love. You should see all these boxes of evidence that they have in this courtroom, like literally boxes. And so every time they ask him to look at something, he's like rifling through boxes. They finally had to give him an assistant. You know, princes don't rifle through boxes. You can't make this stuff up, though. I am fascinated, I must admit. I am fascinated by this trial, and more fascinated than I was by Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, which, by the way, Johnny Depp did not need assistance in combing through his, you know, boxes of evidence. So, you know, maybe Prince Harry just needs to grow up. Anyway, that does it for me today. I got a lot more. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about China. I'm going to be talking with an expert, because let me tell you, we are so far behind the eight ball that it's getting scary. Now, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. Oh, and, you know, I will be talking tomorrow about the joining of the golf tournaments. That's a good story. God bless you, and God bless the USA.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.